listener to episode 10 of Life Without Consequence. My name is Davey Francis, and I am so happy you have joined us up until this point. If this, for some reason, is your first time here, you clicked the wrong one. You need to go back to the beginning because so much has happened. On our last episode, the worlds of 2076's Las Vegas and 2023's Cleveland, Ohio, collided. Tucker decided to help Parker and Benj in hopes of hitching a ride with them back to Las Vegas. He came clean to Benj about his encounter with Brendan and showed him the crooked cop's stolen possessions, particularly the cell phone, a device Benj quickly recognized as being a working teleporter. As if that wasn't enough for them to process, it was also revealed to Parker and Benj that a woman named Nina existed here, and that she was identical in appearance to the woman they had both known back in 2076. As you might imagine, Parker didn't handle this very well, and when we left him, he was being restrained by Tank. Whatever happens next, it needs to happen fast, because whoever Nina is, she's in danger, and the source of that danger is someone who was up until very recently in possession of a teleporter. The first chapter of today's episode is one of my personal favorites I wrote. One of my favorite ways of delivering exposition in this book was to make the one-off side chapters from characters you've never met before and probably don't meet again, and that's exactly what we did here. I needed to explain what happened after the argument in the kitchen with everybody, and I wanted to do that through the eyes of a complete stranger who had no idea what was going on with this crazy, crazy story. It was the perfect opportunity to invent a new character, and I hope you enjoy them as much as I do. As always, a shout out to the Patreon producers, Hampus, Andrew McGuire, Cole Biffle. Thank you so much. Welcome to episode 10. Chapter 32. Caitlin McCafferty. Caitlin didn't even like Tank. Okay, that wasn't entirely true. She liked looking at him. It was just that every time he opened his big, stupid mouth, she was reminded of how few redeeming qualities he actually had. In the rare, mystical moments when Tank wasn't forcing his repugnant points of view onto other people, Caitlin could see the things that tricked her into going home with him. There were no two ways about it. She thought he was hot. Drop dead, melt her panties off, hot. The sex was good, too, which she found doubly obnoxious. Somehow, she'd entered into a pattern where she would sleep with him, swear to the heavens above never to do it again, then 3 months later wind up in an Ohio City pharmacy buying Plan B because she drunkenly called him and he'd been too stupid to remember to pull out. Every time was supposed to be the last time. But there she was again, shuffling around his house trying to find her things and get out of there before he'd do something awful, like smile at her and convince her to go back for seconds. Or was it thirds? They'd had a lot to drink, which had led to the hangover Caitlin was now suffering from. It was so bad, she could barely function like a human. There was only one time in her entire life that Caitlin could remember having a hangover quite as bad as this one. She'd been 17 years old, and was just getting into her rebellious punk rock phase. Caitlin didn't know much about punk rock outside of the Misfits hoodie she wore everywhere, and whatever the employees at Hot Topic told her was cool. Come to think of it, she still didn't know much more than that. But it had never really been about the music for Caitlin. It was about the attitude. And the boys. Pretty, malnourished, tight pants-wearing punk rock boys. There was this local band. They weren't very good, but most of them were cute, and the ones that weren't were old enough to buy her beer. They'd introduced her to 40-ounce bottles of high-gravity malt liquor, which made up for their severely lacking flavor in their ability to get you absolutely trashed for under $3. This band, the name of which had been lost to time and poor decision-making, had this rehearsal space above a wig shop that was a no-holds-barred party paradise for the misled youth who weren't yet old enough to get into bars. For some reason, the door was always unlocked and open to anyone who wanted to go and have fun. One Saturday night, the sketchy keyboard player of the band showed up with a new 40-ounce called Evil Eye. At least, that's what the name on the label translated to. The words written were Ojo Malo. It was a clear glass bottle that housed a cloudy yellow liquid purporting itself to be beer, The label was just a black sticker with two green glowing eyes, the required government warnings, and the ABV. A staggering 10.5%. It tasted absolutely atrocious, and the first few sips genuinely tested Caitlin's commitment to getting drunk. But once she found a rhythm, sipping down the sweet and sour swill became surprisingly easy. After an hour, everyone was halfway through their bottles, and the party was in full swing. The band was playing some loud, heavy songs, the kind of music where the singer sounds like he's trying to pass a rather large kidney stone. It wasn't her thing, but she'd always found live music to be a great addition to a social event. It was beginning to feel like Caitlin was going to have a great night. However, somewhere between her next sip and the memory of a long-haired man setting fire to a pentagram in the carpet, everything suddenly became terrifying. She was dizzy, and the music was too loud. All of her friends had at some point left her, and the only people in the rehearsal space that weren't playing music had all gathered in a small utility closet to share what is still, to this day, the smallest bag of cocaine Caitlin had ever seen. She went into survival mode and decided she needed to get the hell out of there. She blamed everything on the evil eye and wanted to show the malt beverage how much she hated it. Caitlin turned to aggressively pour the rest of it away, but found the bottle was empty. Caitlin had drunk the entire thing. She staggered out onto the streets and zombie walked to a nearby church parking lot where she'd left her car. She wanted her home and her own bed more than anything in the world, but thankfully, Caitlin still had enough sense about her to just crawl into the back seat and pass out until morning. When Caitlin awoke, she found the church's Sunday service was in full swing. In a quick glimpse out of the windows, she saw well-dressed families making their way into worship. She felt like she might burst into flames right there. Whether that was residual religious guilt or a hangover symptom remained to be seen, but she got out of there as quickly as possible. During the 30-minute drive home, she had to pull over 7 times to dry heave and vomit. Every time she swallowed, she could taste the ojo malo, reminding her of what it had done to her. It was the kind of flavor that would randomly crop up over the next 10 years, triggering flashbacks to what she remembered as the worst hangover of her entire life. Today was the first day since then that something had rivaled it. Bursts of energy would come and go. The last time she'd tried to leave, Caitlin had made it all the way to the bathroom before the jackhammer that now lived inside of her brain forced her to take a break on the floor. That's where she was when she was woken up by 2 guys in scary costumes. It had been days since Halloween. Her costume had already been thrown away and forgotten about. But these were apparently the kinds of people who used all 364 days leading up to the next year's spooky festivities to perfect their next costumes. The one guy's costume was particularly gruesome. She could barely see his face for all the gore and blood. It looked totally real. The scare they'd given her felt like it had provided Caitlin with the kind of energy she needed to steal a hoodie and make her escape. But there was Tank, wearing nothing except a towel. What exactly was she supposed to do? Not fuck him? She'd been lying in his bed, trying to navigate a post-coital fugue state when all hell broke loose. Caitlin heard something smash in the hallway outside of Tank's room, and then there was shouting. It wasn't just boys being boys, either. Someone was super angry. Even Tank looked concerned. She'd never seen him act protective of anyone before. She kind of liked it, and followed him when he quickly ran out of the room in the direction of the commotion. It had taken her a moment to wrap herself up in something that didn't have cum on it, and when she arrived in the kitchen, she found Tank pulling some guy off of his roommate with a sleeper hold. Billy was so nice. Caitlin couldn't imagine why anyone would want to hurt him. Eventually, things calmed down. However, it wasn't like they got any less intense. If anything, it all just got weirder. Everyone was arguing about some lady named Nina that Billy said was in trouble, like serious trouble. There was a guy with bruises all over his face who was apparently the Nina lady's ex-boyfriend, and that's why she wanted him to help her. Bruised face guy was scared of Nina's new boyfriend and outright refused to help. Then the angry guy with the shaved head, the one that Tank had choked out, said something totally insane. "No, Tucker, you don't get it. I watched her die." Shaved Head looked around the room, trying to find someone who didn't think he was a total psycho. Even the dirty kid in the corner looked uncomfortable, and Caitlin kinda thought they were supposed to be friends.
I saw her 30 minutes ago, Billy told him.
And I saw her last night. You don't know what you're talking about, said the bruised-faced guy. Then it all got tough to follow, and the dirty kid started talking about time travel and parallel dimensions. Caitlin's head was throbbing. Something like that was just way too much for her to try and process right then. Apparently, the bruised-faced guy had stolen a cell phone from the Nina woman's new boyfriend, and that's why the boyfriend was angry and why he'd hurt Nina. Caitlin didn't understand why guys did things like this. After a bunch more yelling, everyone just stared at the floor or the ceiling for a while. And that's when Caitlin noticed something about two of the guys she didn't know. It probably wasn't the best time to ask questions, but Caitlin felt like everyone could use a change of subject.
Are you guys, like, brothers? She asked,
pointing to Shaved Head Guy and Bruises. The question apparently annoyed them both.
You look really similar. You could totally pass as brothers. She followed up when neither of them had said anything.
Everyone quietly exchanged suspicious looks for a while.
Are you guys serious? Tank said. I guess I didn't notice before because he looked like he just crawled out of a sewer, but cleaned up. You two look basically fucking identical.
It was nice of him to have her back, she thought. Everyone took a moment to exchange glances. Billy and the dirty kid shrugged at each other like they kind of agreed with her too. The guy with bruises and the shaved head guy, though, they looked significantly offended.
You gotta be kidding me, Tank said, rolling his eyes. Both of you even make the same whiny bitch face, like you're ready to cry about someone calling you a mean name.
Then Tank screwed his face up and jeeringly pretended to cry.
Get off it, dickhead. Tucker looks like shit, the shaved head guy said to Tank.
Caitlin took note that the guy with the bruises was called Tucker.
I look like shit because you punched me 30 times, asshole,
Tucker responded.
And I should have punched you more because you're a fucking snake, Tucker. If you just told us about the cop, we could have waited for him and Nina wouldn't be in trouble. This is all your fault.
Shaved head guy shook his open hands frustratedly, and Caitlin noticed that they were covered in cuts and bruises. She suddenly found herself feeling uncomfortable.
Why do you give a shit, man? You've never even met her.
Tucker told the angry guy, who looked like he was ready to start fighting people again.
Parker, we have his phone. Let's just leave. Nina's a big girl. She can take care of herself. We can go anywhere with this thing, right?
Parker. Shaved head guy was named Parker. Tucker pointed at two phones that were set next to each other on the table where her and Tank were sitting. His suggestion that they leave seemed to upset everyone, even Billy, who she'd never seen without a smile on his face. Nobody started yelling, though. This was like when your parents tell you they're not angry, they're just disappointed.
Tucker, we're talking about Nina, Billy said.
Yeah, man, you just gonna bail on your old lady like that?
Tank added. It looked like Tucker was about to start saying something, but Parker stopped him before he could get any words out.
No.
Shut the fuck up, he said. I'm sick of hearing your voice. There was a real severe twinge of disgust in his tone. It sent a little shiver down Caitlin's spine. She studied Parker as the room fell quiet again. He leaned back against the counter, crossing his legs and massaging the prickly stubble on his face as he settled into a thought. It seemed like everyone in the room was just waiting for him to do something.
Fuck it,
he said finally, his words cracking a little as they fell out of his mouth into the world.
Bench, how do you feel about a hero moment? I kinda think we're due one.
Bench, that was the dirty kid in the corner, cocked his head to the side and pushed out his lower lip. Caitlin didn't know what a hero moment was supposed to be, but Benj didn't look like he had any objections to one. There was a sense of excitement in the room after he said it. Billy's cute smile began to reappear, and she noticed Tank nodding enthusiastically. She felt his big, strong hands tighten around her waist. Kind of gave her butterflies. Not even Tucker's brooding could ruin it.
What are you guys gonna do?
She asked excitedly. Parker clapped his hands together and smiled.
I'm gonna go murder a cop.
He said it like he couldn't understand why that course of action hadn't been obvious to everyone. It wasn't the answer she or anyone else in that kitchen had been expecting. And as the building excitement quickly deflated, Tucker, the guy with the bruises, got up and stormed out of the kitchen. They all sat in silence, listening to the clattering sounds of a tantrum happening in the back of the house, until Tucker reappeared in the doorway, with a bag slung over his shoulder. He stared at Parker, and Caitlin noticed the two men's scowls made their similarities even more pronounced. "Parker, we could go anywhere," Tucker said flatly. Parker didn't say anything immediately. He just glanced at his dirty friend like he was looking for help. And then he looked back to Tucker. "Maybe here's just where I'm supposed to be, man."
Chapter 33. Parker. For the first time in, well, ever, Parker and Benj had something that resembled a plan. He'd spent the majority of his life flying by the seat of his pants, relying on the mole people, and hoping that things would just work out. For the most part, they had. But recently, they'd all started working out at the cost of some other people's lives. And something that was probably guilt was beginning to weigh heavily on Parker. In light of these recent events, Parker figured now was maybe a good time to give thinking things through a try. Parker usually tried not to think about things like fate or higher beings. Thinking about the infinity of the universe made his heart race, and usually triggered that natural fight-or-flight mechanic most brains come preloaded with. The thing that's meant to help you figure out how to deal with a bear attack or a particularly aggressive stovetop fire. Most of the time, when things of a more cosmic nature came up, Parker just tried to ignore them. Right now, though, he was struggling to ignore the fact that somehow, at the very moment he was beginning to realize his actions had consequences for people other than himself, he'd been presented with the opportunity to try and make up for spending so long thinking otherwise. Billy's directions had been 3 blocks up, 5 blocks west, then look for a bright red Jeep Cherokee. And that had all sounded pretty simple until Parker was freezing his ass off around Franklin and 45th, realizing he had no idea what a Jeep Cherokee looked like. He knew it was an SUV, but apparently everyone in Cleveland drove those big stupid things. And what exactly constituted as bright? Billy told him he'd know it when he saw it, but at present, he didn't see it. Parker peered up and down the long street looking for something that stood out. There were lots of things that caught his eye. None of them was a bright red car, though. He saw giant trees lining both sides of the road. Some of them were so big their roots pushed the pavement slabs up into jagged pyramids that jutted up out of the snowbanks. It was a strange way to think about it, considering where he'd come from. But it all looked kind of apocalyptic. A couple of women who looked like they were in their early 20s power walked around him with a tiny dog on a leash. Instinctually, Parker lowered his head and tried not to make eye contact. But they said hello. A chipper, almost genuine hello. Hi, he replied with gruff confusion. One of them looked over her shoulder and smiled. She was cute. Pale, but cute. She apparently found the confused look painted across Parker's face amusing and giggled to her friend as they continued walking. Parker struggled with the notion, but were people just nicer in the past? That was a thought that brought him crashing back to the reality of his actual life. Was he even in the past? They'd assumed the device had sent them backwards in time, but there was something about meeting his spineless doppelganger and seeing a photo of a woman who looked exactly like his girlfriend that complicated that theory. If it wasn't time travel, what exactly had happened? And were they stuck here? He'd hinted at it when they were all arguing in the kitchen. But if they really were stuck here, Parker didn't think he cared. So far, the cold was the only thing he really hated about Cleveland, and that was something that could be dealt with by wearing clothes more appropriate than a pair of jeans 3 sizes too big and a t-shirt that felt like it was woven from tangible hope. Before he could lament on the temperature too much, Parker noticed the back end of a boxy SUV poking out from behind some snow-covered bushes. Billy was right. He knew it when he saw it. He'd never seen a red car be quite that red before. Parker felt his heart start to race a little. It was something that had started happening since they'd arrived here in Cleveland, and he'd been dealing with it by popping pills.
The combination of red and blue brought him back to a calm state of being without slowing him down too much that his main interests devolved into sitting and nodding out. They came on quick and were keeping him sharp, which was good. Sharp was what he needed for the things he was about to do. As he got closer and more of the vehicle revealed itself, he couldn't help himself thinking about how out of character the Jeep was for Nina. She'd liked things sleek and sporty, going so far as to kick up a fuss when her job tried to put her and her partner in a Ford Explorer instead of the Dodge Charger unit. The car was out of date by nearly 15 years and couldn't use most of the electronics the Explorer could. But Nina wanted something quick and agile, two adjectives he would have never used to describe this Jeep. It didn't stop there, either. On the back bumper were stickers that said things like coexist and equality. There was a collection of colorful dancing bears that Parker didn't recognize, but felt strangely compelled to rip off and discard. Nina didn't go for any of that stuff. She'd like tequila and rock music from the 1980s. She thought Chinese people were obnoxious, and that Christians had held humanity back for centuries. Coexisting wasn't her style. It took looking through the window of the car and seeing the leopard print steering wheel cover to jog his memory. While this woman had her name and looked just like her, she was not Nina. Not his Nina, at least. His Nina was gone, and thinking about it was giving him a similar feeling to the contemplation of infinity. There was no time for panic, though. Whoever this woman was, she needed help, so Parker focused on helping. Other than the two dog walkers, Parker hadn't seen another soul during his walk over there. But before he began phase one of Operation Help Someone Other Than Yourself, Parker checked to make sure there weren't any onlookers who might get in the way, because he was about to make a scene. The house Nina lived in was raised up above street level. It had a steep, snow-covered bank of a yard leading down to a loose brick wall where it met the sidewalk. Parker pulled one of the top bricks from the wall and, without any hesitation, hurled it as hard as he could at the front window of the house. It smashed through with a beautiful sound that any enthusiast of chaos would have been rock hard for.
"Hey, fuckhead!"
he barked at the house.
"Why don't you put your little dick away and come the fuck outside?"
He felt uncomfortable with the comment almost immediately. Parker never really had what you'd call a scholarly grasp of the English language, but that statement had been particularly lowbrow, even for him. He shook it off. It wasn't supposed to impress the guy. It was supposed to get his attention. And based on the seething rage Parker saw burning behind the eyes of the person who appeared where a window had recently been, it had worked. Parker waved at the man through a toothy, over-exaggerated grin that stretched from one ear to the other. Billy had told Parker that Brendan looked like Alan Rickman in Die Hard. But Parker had no clue what that meant. He tried to clarify by saying things like Hans Gruber and Snape, all words that confused Parker even more. Eventually, Billy simplified it and explained that Brendan had a beard and looked way too old to be Nina's boyfriend. Seeing the guy now, that explanation made complete sense. It took seconds for Parker's new adversary to appear on the front stoop. The pills were doing their job, and in the time it took for Brendan to withdraw from the window and step outside, they afforded Parker a moment of internal laughter where he imagined this brooding villain clumsily hopping around a couch to get outside as quick as possible. Brendan strutted confidently out of the front door, dressed in ripped police blues and a self-assured smile. The shoulders of the shirt were torn, the right almost being completely separated from the rest of the shirt. It was untucked, and buttons were missing. But he still walked as if he was so full of pride that he might spill some if he wasn't careful. For a moment, it looked like he was going to come right at Parker with no hesitation. But he took one step off of the stoop and stopped dead in his tracks, his mouth falling open slightly as he narrowed his eyes at Parker, examining him. Parker had been reactively resilient to the suggestion that he and Tucker looked even slightly similar. But Tank and that raccoon were right. They could easily have passed as brothers. It was yet another twist in the mystery that he and Benj now lived in, one that Parker found particularly unsettling after finding out about Tucker's relationship with this Nina woman. It was like the universe kept trying to one-up itself with crazier and crazier things. Do you think the world is nuts? Well, check out this teleporter. Don't get comfortable, though, because if you think that teleporter's wild, get this. It's a time machine. Did time travel blow your mind? Well, you're not going to believe this. It's actually an interdimensional transportation module. If this whole thing hasn't blown the doors completely off of you yet, here's an exact replica of the recently deceased love of your life who has an on-again, off-again relationship with a guy who looks just like you. Parker tried not to think about how things could escalate from here. While he was happy that he and Tucker weren't completely identical, Parker had hoped that he could have fooled Brendan for at least a little while. He had no clue what sort of advantage that would give him, but hey, why be yourself when you can be someone else? Who are you? Brendan asked, slow and methodically. It was like all the rage he displayed looking out the window had all of a sudden been usurped by this new enigmatic development. The strangest thing was that it looked like he was happy about it. Tucker got so scared he went to the trouble of finding an imposter to send in his place. Brendan spoke with the confidence of a man who'd never been beaten up. The kind of guy who'd been an asshole his entire life and had never seen the consequences for it. I like to think of myself as the definitive version of us, Parker quipped. You know, honed to perfection by the infinity of the universe. He watched Brendan's eyes glance down at the green 100,000 Leagues Under My Nutsack logo, taking up the majority of his shirt. Yes, I can see why you'd think that, Brendan said, then snorted condescendingly. This annoyed the hell out of Parker. He'd been so proud of the comeback. This horrible t-shirt had ruined the perfect opener to their confrontation. What exactly is it you think you know about Infinity? He paused. I'm sorry. Am I supposed to call you Tucker? Parker's internal monologue was screaming insults in Brendan's direction. This guy had a supervillain complex for sure. No, you can call me Parker, he said. And I don't know much about Infinity outside of those mediocre snake tags you and your asshole itinerant buddies like to paint on everything. This comment seemed to hit a nerve. Brendan apparently didn't expect Parker to know quite so much. Seriously, man, I know branding's important, Parker continued, but you dickbags need a severe lesson in restraint. It's not that cool looking. You're not from here, are you, Parker? Brendan asked, almost playfully. He seemed genuinely curious as he stepped down from the stoop and onto the driveway. No, and I'm willing to bet neither are you. What's the matter? Too much of a pussy for the future? Parker was trying to get under the guy's skin, and it wasn't working. Everything Parker said just seemed to intrigue Brendan even more. Is that where you're from? The future? Brendan was slowly moving in Parker's direction. If he hadn't been able to see his legs moving, he would have assumed Brendan was slithering. It was a strange word to use because, from the way Brendan had initially held himself, prowling would have been a more accurate way of describing his movements. It was like the guy was a fistful of different predators all rolled up into one asshole. Parker was beginning to get the impression that Brendan was probing for information. Did he know things that Brendan didn't? Parker didn't think he knew anything. Was Brendan just another nobody who found a phone? A thing like that could quickly turn someone into a real piece of shit, Parker thought. Brendan struck him as the kind of guy that had been a piece of shit for quite some time, though. The two men eyed each other suspiciously. Parker still couldn't shake the feeling that Brendan was enjoying this. Ignoring the question he'd been asked, Parker changed the subject. Doing so probably gave away more information than it withheld. But Parker wanted to know about Nina. Where is she? He asked. The question seemed to fill Brendan with delight, which sparked a certain amount of paranoia within Parker. Why do you care, Parker? Brendan asked, visibly amused by the change of subject. You know, you're the second person who's asked me that today, and honestly, I've just got this thing about shitty guys treating women like property. That's not it, Brendan replied almost immediately. Do you know her? Or some version of her? This comment threw Parker completely. He couldn't help but think that if the circumstances were different, he could have sat down with this guy and learned a lot about what was going on. By now, the chance of any pleasantries the two might have shared was long gone. Brendan's enjoyment seemed to be waning and turning into something closer to frustration at this point. After he spoke, Brendan stretched out his jaw and worked his neck in a small circle. The motion looked unnatural, almost painful.
"Why don't you just let her go? This is what you want, right?"
Parker pulled out the gold-rimmed device from his pocket and held it up for Brendan to see. The sight of it grabbed all of Brendan's attention and brought a halt to the slow ebb of his approach.
"You have no idea what that is," Brendan told him.
"You're right. And you know what? I don't fucking care. Because this thing is more trouble than..." Parker was cut off.
Brendan somehow covered the 4 to 5 feet that had been separating them in the blink of an eye and punched Parker square in the chest. The blow threw Parker backwards against Nina's Jeep so hard the passenger side window imploded, then ricocheted him forwards right into Brendan, who wrapped his left hand around Parker's throat, punching him several more times with his right. As the phone went clattering to the floor, Parker's immediate reflex was to try and insult his attacker. To absolutely nobody's surprise, this wasn't the first time Parker's mouth had encouraged violence. It happened enough times, in fact, that he'd learned how to take a punch so gracefully he could usually ignore the pain and colorfully explain the punch's flaws to the individual that had thrown it. When he tried to pipe up to Brendan, though, Parker found that his vocal cords weren't currently functional. There was no air in his lungs, no feeling in his fists, and from the way his feet were rolling from side to side, very possibly no longer any bones in his legs. The only thing keeping him upright was the strength of Brendan's left arm and the grip from his fingers. His face froze with shock and fear as he looked into the eyes of a man who very much looked like he enjoyed hurting people. Parker began to consider that there was the slightest chance he had underestimated the kind of person he was dealing with.
"Are you scared yet?"
Brendan growled through gritted teeth.
"Not particularly,"
Parker replied. Or at least he tried to. It was next to impossible to drag any air into his lungs with the way Brendan was squeezing. It somehow felt like his hand kept gripping more and more of his neck. Brendan smashed him against the car again, and Parker felt the warm sensation of blood beginning to trickle down the back of his neck. At least it wasn't his face this time, he thought. Parker saw the peripheries of his vision beginning to darken, the definitive signal that you were about to black out. The blackness swallowed the entirety of his sight until there was only one pinprick of color left. Before it went entirely dark, though, Parker heard a sound. He wondered if it was some version of deja vu, where his oxygen-deprived brain had inserted a sound effect to his loss of consciousness. It wasn't that, though, because he heard the sound again right as he hit the ground, suddenly free from Brendan's murderous grip. What Parker saw when his eyesight returned surprised, horrified, and disturbed him. That's not to say he wasn't happy about it. So happy that he allowed a slight smile to creep across his face as he lay against the cold ground watching Tucker beat Brendan's skull to a pulp with a wooden 2x4.
"My hero,"
he muttered to himself, even though he didn't think Tucker was paying attention. Chapter 34. Benj. Tucker had stormed out after everybody showed their cards in the kitchen. He'd grabbed a bag from his room and disappeared out the front door, with barely a word to anyone. Benj was worried that after realizing what he'd had in his pocket all day, Tucker might try to leave with a device, but he'd apparently just cut his losses and left. It was probably for the best, Benj thought. He'd struggled to get an accurate read on their new friend all day, and hadn't landed anywhere near trusting him by the time Tucker had come clean. With Tucker gone, Benj was free to investigate the device he'd stolen from Brendan. For the most part, it was exactly the same as the one Mad Mike had left on their porch, the primary difference being that this one worked. It powered up, displaying the same logo of a snake eating its tail, something Benj was sick to death of seeing at this point. Benj only began to notice differences once it had completely booted up. Unlike Benj's phone, which only had one app on it, the teleporter/time machine disguised as a social media platform, this phone had a whole screen full of them. There was a notepad,
a media folder. Brendan even had a Twitter account. What really caught Benj's attention was how mundane a lot of the apps were. This device was filled with the kinds of things that a parent might use to keep a child busy. A virtual fish tank that bubbled innocuously as colorful fish and hermit crabs floated about the screen. A virtual fireplace that audibly popped and crackled through the speakers. There was even a light switch app that was precisely what the name implied. A big cartoon light switch that flipped on and off as you swiped across the screen, and did exactly nothing outside of adjusting the screen's brightness. Lacking the spare time and patience to trudge through the boring applications, Benj ignored them all and focused on the one he was familiar with, the teleporter. While the app's icon was identical to his, the UI that appeared upon opening it felt like a slightly more updated version. It felt more fleshed out in comparison to the bare-bones look of his and Parker's. But it looked as though it all worked the same. This was good, because Benj had convinced Parker that he could use Brendan's device to help Nina, as long as Parker could keep the guy busy for a while. Benj was working under the assumption that Nina's boyfriend had gone psycho after Tucker stole his phone. Without his teleporter, he'd have to have taken Nina somewhere local, and Benj hoped that the device would give him some clue as to where that was. He clicked the menu that opened up the list of stored destinations and saw the same list he had in his phone. Dallas, Long Beach, the same two Vegas destinations. There was the sudden realization that he and Parker had found a way home, but the idea soured when he considered what was waiting for them back in Las Vegas. As he scrolled through the list, Benj could feel everyone's eyes focused on him. Parker had left him alone with Billy, Tank, and the disheveled girl he assumed was Tank's girlfriend. He wished Parker had taken him along to Brendan and Nina's place, but he'd been adamant about doing it alone. Parker had been looking for a fight ever since they'd lost Nina. There, Nina. And Benj figured this was as good a time as any for him to go work some of that frustration out. "What do you know about this guy?" he asked everyone while keeping his eyes down on the phone. No one said anything, and Benj felt a twinge of frustration move through his thoughts. He wasn't like Parker. He couldn't just speak and grab the attention of an entire room with a tirade of bullshit. He'd spent 13 years in silence without any concern for how he was supposed to act in social situations. And now here he was trying to rally a group of strangers for a rescue mission. This was uncharted territory for Parker and Benj. Heroics weren't really their thing. Benj could think of multiple recent occasions where the two of them had chosen to completely ignore large-scale brawls that had broken out at Nightbar. During one incident, Rusty had hopped the bar and started swinging a tire iron at people. He and Parker just kept drinking like nothing unusual was happening behind them. He wondered how enthusiastic they'd be if it weren't this particular person in trouble, but decided, much like he was sure Parker had decided, that they could deal with those questions after the helping and saving was over and done with.
"I've never met the guy," Tank said,
a sentiment that was echoed by the confused look on his girlfriend's face. To Benj's total surprise, Tank seemed completely on board with the idea that he and Parker were interdimensional time travelers from the future, or whatever it was they were classifying themselves as at this point. He hadn't even asked for proof. The only questions Tank had seemed to orbit around who he would be punching and when he would get to punch them.
"He's just a cop," Billy chimed in. "He's a boring, run-of-the-mill cop. Maybe he's a little protective. Probably says the N-word casually around his white friends. Nina told me they just hang out at home and watch movies. She said he spends a lot of time in his office. I don't know, man. I just don't know."
Billy sounded frantic. He was clearly having trouble organizing his thoughts as he paced back and forth across the kitchen. The guy had been a real sport about Parker's most recent outburst. Benj had explained the rather absurd intricacies of the situation to him once Parker had calmed down. Whether he believed it all or not, his focus seemed to stay firmly on helping out his friend, someone he believed was in real danger. He seemed like a nice guy. As Benj continued to scroll through the list of locations saved on the phone, he came across the first two that hadn't been part of his list. There was office work and office home. Both of them were about as nondescript as it gets, but they were the closest thing Benj had found to a lead, and were a perfect excuse for him to leave for a while. To say he was uncomfortable around these people would have been a reckless understatement. Leaving to check out the two offices was a welcome reprieve. Stay here,
Benj said as he focused the device's camera on himself.
I'll be right back.
Before he could leave, he noticed Tank's girlfriend smiling at him. He smiled back reflexively, but was pretty sure he looked horribly awkward doing it. His face was still covered in blood.
Is this what you guys do?
Tank's girlfriend asked him with a gravelly 5 p.m. morning voice.
Help people, I mean,
she clarified. He raised an eyebrow at her. Benj didn't know what he was supposed to say. Not really? Maybe? It wasn't something he'd ever really thought about. The closest thing they did to helping people was preventing the onset of feelings via the moonshine they'd cooked up in their basement. Maybe where they were from, that was the best way to help. Maybe if they'd been born somewhere like this, he and Parker would have become humanitarians. He didn't think so, but he liked the idea that they might be capable of doing some good. Not exactly, he replied. Then before the conversation could go any further, Benj tapped the screen and disappeared. Immediately, the temperature change shocked him. The house had been so warm he'd taken off the filthy hoodie he'd been wearing since yesterday. Now, with nothing protecting his arms, he felt the full power of the frozen winter air attacking him. After the cold, and probably more alarming, Benj felt the sensation of falling. He was only in free fall for maybe 2 seconds before the full force of his body weight slammed into something solid. But in that time, Benj was able to envision a litany of gruesome ends he might have been moments away from facing. Where Parker complained, Benj thought about worst-case scenarios. He thought that the chair would have come with him when he teleported because he was touching it. Apparently, that wasn't the case. The rules to this thing were obnoxiously unclear, and he made a mental note that going forward, he would stand up to teleport. After he spent a few moments writhing around on the floor, Benj got up and checked out his surroundings. He was on a rooftop in what he assumed was downtown Cleveland. It wasn't the tallest building downtown, but it allowed him to see for quite a distance in all directions. Benj could even see out into the lake, which looked infinite even from this vantage. He'd never been to the ocean, and Nevada's Lake Mead had been little more than a glorified pond his entire life. It was hard to pull his eyes away from it. It just looked so incredible, so impossible. There wasn't much to see on the actual roof, but he walked a lap of the center structure just to make sure he hadn't missed something obvious. He tried the 3 doors, but when he found all of them locked, Benj decided he'd have better luck with Brendan's home office. After all, that's where Nina had told Billy to send Tucker. Benj took one last look at the lake, and then tapped the screen to head back to Billy's place. When he landed in the kitchen, he was standing on top of the chair where he had been sitting. Everyone was staring at him with their mouths gaping wide open like they'd just seen a ghost. What? He asked as he stepped down off of the chair. Tank's girlfriend screamed, and Billy covered his mouth. Tank looked like he was ready to flip the table.
You just...
Billy mumbled through his fingers.
Teleported? Benj asked, trying not to sound annoyed.
I explained all of this to you before. I wasn't lying. Fuck me, this is awesome,
Tank said, slamming his fist down so hard everything on the table bounced.
You were... how?
Billy mumbled again.
I promise this is way more mellow for you than it was for me and Parker.
What's it like?
Tank blurted out with the excitement of a teenager.
We don't have time for this,
Benj yelled. He knew that Parker could talk. He just didn't know how long Brendan would listen before escalating things. The only information Benj got from Tucker was the feeling that Brendan had scared the hell out of him. Sure, Parker had been looking for a fight, but Benj was starting to worry what would happen if this Brendan guy was someone Parker couldn't handle. Without wasting any more time, Benj selected home office, focused the camera, and then teleported out of the kitchen. He felt the chill roll over his body and immediately found himself stood barely an inch away from a plain white wall. The gloss coat of paint was peeling and revealed the white plasterboard underneath, untouched for decades, avoiding the yellowed oxidation visible on the rest of the wall. From behind him, Benj heard the muffled shriek of a gagged woman that somehow sounded like it was all at once coming from inside of his own skull and miles away. Disoriented by the confusing sound, Benj turned to look at the rest of the office and saw that it stretched out into what looked like forever, like when two mirrors reflect each other.
Whoa,
he exclaimed, and heard the words spoken back to him a million times over from a million different directions before quickly decaying and vanishing into the ambient noise of the room.
It hummed like the walls were filled with an entire planet's worth of centipedes, all walking at the same time. It wasn't loud, but it encapsulated the whole space and brought pressure to being there. The room tunneled on, impossibly repeating the same dull home office until it began to curve, darken, and distort. He could make out the shape of a person curled up on the floor in the center of the tunnel. It was difficult to look directly at it without growing dizzy. Bench had barely been there a minute, but he could already feel the slightest twinge of nausea coming on. He understood why the device had teleported him in facing the wall. Whether he knew about this or not, being suddenly presented with this view of forever would never stop being absolutely terrifying. Bench tried to take off running and was hit with the strangest sensation of speeding up, while somehow simultaneously slowing down, but also falling. Mired in the directional mess of movement, there was a resistance to his strides. Bench couldn't tell if he was traveling up or downhill. Running felt nearly impossible, but he grit his teeth and pushed through, concentrating on putting one foot in front of the other, only occasionally looking up to see how much closer he was to the person he hoped was Nina. It was beginning to feel like it would take days to get to her. Exhaustion was setting in, and the nausea was getting worse. "Ah, fuck!" he yelled out in frustration. Feeling like he'd missed something, Benj pulled the device out, intending to head back to Billy's place and try and figure out what he'd done wrong. However, as he scanned through all the pointless apps Brendan had collected, Benj wondered if the answer he was looking for was actually right in front of him. Benj looked at the virtual fish tank. He stared into the flames of the virtual fireplace. He even scrolled through Brendan's Twitter feed looking for clues, but didn't find anything. It wasn't until he opened the virtual light switch that Benj realized how simple the solution had been the whole time. The digital switch took over the screen with poorly rendered blocky cell shading, reminiscent of 1980s computer graphics. Cautiously, Benj slid his finger across the screen and watched the switch flip from an off position to on. For the briefest of moments, he thought nothing would happen. A thought that was quickly and dramatically proven false when the infinity on either side of him rushed inwards like a collapsing accordion. Now the room was just a typical, dull home office. Nina lay on the floor right there in front of him. There were handcuffs around her wrists, attached to another set of cuffs that were around her ankles. There was a strip of duct tape over her mouth, which gave Benj an alarming flashback to Lenny. As she struggled and screamed through the tape, Benj found himself briefly paralyzed, waiting for a beeping to start. He stared at her, Nina. She'd been beaten up pretty bad. The right side of her face was grazed and bruised. Her nose was bloody, and she had a split through her right eyebrow that bled into her eye. Even through the injuries, she looked just like Nina. He couldn't believe it. When there was no beeping, Benj shook off his panic and held his hands up. "Don't be scared. I'm not here to hurt you." He crouched down and peeled at the corner of the tape. "I'm going to take this off. Please don't scream." She met his eyes. He could feel her shaking, but she nodded slightly, acknowledging his request. The tape came off and Nina coughed, gasping for air. "You're safe. You're totally safe. I'm going to get you out of here." Benj rocked Nina upright and gave her a moment to catch her breath. The cuffs prevented her from standing, but it was better than being stuck on her side like that. "I heard things breaking outside," she said. Benj screwed up his face. "Yeah, that was probably Parker." She squinted her eyes like she didn't understand. "Parker? You mean Tucker?" "No, I mean Parker," he said. "I gotta go help him now, so let's get you out of here." Benj put his arm around her and held up the phone as he focused the screen on them. "What are you, taking a fucking selfie?" she snapped. He couldn't believe how much she sounded like Nina, too. "A what?" he asked, but didn't wait for a response. Benj tapped the screen, and in less time than it took to blink, they were both back in Billy's kitchen, where everyone gasped in shock. "What just happened?" Nina said through breaths that sounded like she was hyperventilating. "Don't just stand there, get her some water!" Benj snapped at the gawking onlookers. Snapping back to reality, Billy grabbed a glass and tried to fill it under the faucet. It slipped through his shaken fingers and smashed against the dirty plates discarded in the bottom of the sink. Benj wanted to yell, but stopped himself. With his hands still shaking, Billy handed Benj a mug of water,
that he held to Nina's lips. She sipped, and then quickly shook her head, signaling for him to pull the cup away. "Where is he?" she said between sharp breaths.
"Tucker? I don't know. He just took off," Benj replied.
"No! Brendan, where is he?"
"Don't worry," he assured her. "You're safe. Parker's handling him."
She looked at him with the kind of shock and terror that, even after everything he'd been through in his entire life, Benj had never seen before. Nina looked as though she was going to explode, like she was going to descend into an unhinged fit of shrieking.
He's not a person," she said,
suddenly sounding confused, like the words she used were right, but also somehow wrong.
He changed into something else.
Nina tried to reach and grab Benj by his shirt, but was stopped by the cuffs. She grunted and shook, frustrated by the makeshift shackles.
"He's not human," she shouted. "Your friend's probably already dead."
I can't let this go without telling the story. Caitlin McCafferty is named after a woman I went on a date with at the tender age of 18 years old. I drove from Cleveland, Ohio to Columbus, Ohio to meet her, where we would go to a Peaches concert. She was fanatical about Peaches. She went nuts and was so excited when we got to the show that she was insistent that we get to the front of the crowd, which I made sure we did. We fought our way all the way to the barricade, and this girl went ham for every single song. So much so that Peaches noticed and pointed out, "Hey, look at this girl going ham down here. You want to get up on stage and dance with me?" Of course the girl wanted to, so, you know, we helped her over the barricade, and she got up on stage and danced like she was possessed. After that song ended, Caitlin McCafferty exited stage right. I watched her mismatched high-top Converse disappear off into the blackness of the backstage area. And I waited as the rest of the show happened. I waited until the last song ended. I waited until the crowds dissipated. And it was just me and security who told me that I had to leave. I paused and said, "No, I can't leave. The girl I came with is in the back. She went back there." And the guys just kind of shrugged at me. So I left the venue. Now, this is 2003, 4 at this point, and we don't have cell phones, not ones that make text messages anyway. So I got back in my car, and I drove back to Cleveland 2 hours up the highway, where I checked the internet and an early form of social media known as Friendster. There was no response from her. She hadn't said anything. I sent a message that day and the next day. None of them got read. And then a week later, her profile just disappeared. So she either blocked me or something more suspicious happened. I don't want to speculate. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm just here to tell you the story of the time that Peaches stole my date. You can finish the outro now, Dave.
Artwork for Life Without Consequence was provided by Daniel Sewell. You can find him on Twitter at WriterDanSewell. That's DanSoule. Music for this episode was provided by me, Davey Francis. You can find more of my music and access to the Life Without Consequence Patreon at DaveyFrancis.com.
Shit.